This is a special Soundcast interview with composer Tyler Bates. I'm Christopher Coleman of TrackSounds.com and the Soundcast, and I speak with Tyler Bates about his most recent project, which hit theaters on August 1st, 2014, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy is directed by James Gunn and follows the adventures of Peter Quill and his ragtag team of superhero misfits as they are subjects of an unrelenting bounty hunt by Ronan the Accuser, a villain hell-bent on conquering the universe. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy first appeared in comic books way back in January of 1969 in Marvel Superheroes issue number 18. The film stars Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, and features the voice talents of Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper. Tyler Bates' credits span across film, television, and video games and new media. His credits include working with Zack Snyder on Dawn of the Dead and 300, a soundtrack which sold nearly 400,000 albums, making it one of the most popular score albums of this century. Bates' authentic approach drew the attention of Dawn of the Dead screenwriter James Gunn, which led to collaborations and scores for James Gunn's horror comedy Slither and his comically tragic superhero classic Super. Guardians of the Galaxy is the third collaboration between Bates and Gunn. Other credits from Tyler Bates include Watchmen, Rob Zombie's two Halloween films, and recent video game scores such as Killzone Shadowfall and God of War Ascension. I speak to Tyler Bates about what sort of reaction he's been receiving from both fans and friends in Hollywood to his latest feature film score. He also mentions a very personal connection that he has with the film's protagonist, Peter Quill. Finally, we discuss how he would approach a theme for the big bad Thanos and any potential involvement he may have in the sequel and the newly announced animated feature coming to Disney XD. I'm curious as to what kind of reaction you've been getting personally as the composer for the score from people in the industry, composer friends, fans. What kind of reaction have you been getting yourself directly?
Thankfully so. What I'm aware of has all been very positive. You know, people in the business have seen it, have been very positive. I think, hey, you know, it's sort of like a backhanded compliment, but I think some people are surprised that it's such a melodic score coming from me. But personally, I mean, that's more of a natural musical statement for me. There's been periods of time, you know, in my career where I have to take whatever jobs I have the opportunity to do, and a lot of them were sort of dark and disturbing, droney, filthy sounding creepy scores, or
yeah,
things that were just, you know, loud and, you know, percussive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been an urban guy, I've been a jazz guy, you know, so I just do the best I can with whatever opportunities I have, but
sure.
I'm a songwriter, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know when it was first announced a year ago or more that you were going to be on the project, I know my immediate thoughts were, what might Tyler Bates do for this film? And two scores came to my mind immediately, Doomsday and Watchmen. And I was like, I wonder if he'll combine those two kinds of sounds, because Doomsday kind of had that 80s, some 80s synth in there.
Sure.
And Watchmen obviously was a superhero film unto itself. But really, that's not the direction you went at all. And I think if there may be some surprise, it's from that. It's kind of, you know, based on, well, this is what we've heard of him in the past, and you know, here's it's related to the, I mean, it is superhero genre, so maybe we're going in that direction. So I was surprised myself, and happily so, with the direction you went. But now you've got people saying, reviewers, fans are saying, this is Guardians of the Galaxy is this generation's Star Wars, and that's a pretty serious statement. When you hear things like that, what do you think about it? What do you think about in terms of, and you're the one providing the score for such a film?
To be honest with you, I can't even process that sort of thing. You know, I really don't read much, even if I know there's a positive review somebody wants me to read. I don't, because you start, you know, I don't want to. You know, you start thinking about that stuff, and then you start believing it. You know, I want to do better work, you know.
Yeah.
This was cool, and James Gunn's amazing, and he is, you know, a tremendous exception in Hollywood. I mean, if you consider the modest performance at the box office of his last couple films, and they're mm-hmm. brilliant, in my opinion, Super and Slither.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he brought me with on this one, and you know, when we first discussed it was just like, let's just make the greatest movie ever. We're probably not gonna, but we're gonna try.
it's a nice goal to shoot for.
You know, and we're just, you know, the feeling of the music and the feeling of this movie is really both of us tapping into those first moments is adolescence, you know, seeing movies that impacted us that really caught our attention. You know, I mean, there were always movies that you'd see on TV around holidays. Like, I love the big epics like Lawrence of Arabia and stuff, but
mm-hmm.
man, you know, you see Star Wars as a kid or Jaws or,
yeah,
you know, any of those movies, and it just took you somewhere else, and that was really exciting. And so that feeling that we had back then is really what was the spirit of making this movie together.
Yeah. Well, and it certainly comes through in terms of the film, the music, everything comes together, and it's fun. And that's not something that, well, I guess a lot of movies, summer movies, try to be fun, but fail. And this is one that, you know, I think audiences are connecting to that, and they're like, you know what? They know what they're trying to do and what they're trying to be, and they're succeeding at it, and we're with them on that ride. And and I think that'll be measured in the box office this weekend, and that's a big, big kudos to you and James Gunn and everyone who's the creative team on this film.
Oh yeah, he's funny. I mean, James is funny, and he's naturally cutting in the way that he, just his dialogue, the way he speaks. You know, this isn't stylized, this movie, you know, like it's not hyper stylized. This is just natural for James. It's his it's his thing, as far as the way the dialogue can sometimes be awkward, and
yeah
it's his sense of humor, you know.
Yeah.
And I think he does it pretty effortlessly, and I think that's why people have responded to it, because it is authentic and it's genuine and the emotions are genuine. I mean, you know, to him, Rocket Raccoon is completely a real person or a real being, and so we always intended on treating Rocket that way, you know.
Right.
And I think, so you look at the humor, the comedy, and the emotions, it's all done with a great deal of humility and authenticity coming from James. So
yeah,
for me as a composer, I was not assigned to do funny music, you know.
Yeah.
Funny is funny. Music doesn't make it funny, you know.
Right.
For this kind of humor. So
yeah, there's no Mickey Mousing going on. I mean, you know, the music is serious and dramatic. And
yeah, there's a lot of motors going on in the background in the music when we have to get through some of the action stuff, but it's still a lot of fun.
Right. Well, talk a little bit more about, you know, you're working with James Gunn, especially in terms of writing the music so early on in the process that they would be able to film to it. What kind of pressure did that add to you?
You know, I always look at it, I looked at it as taking pressure off of me until I actually realized the context of it.
Yeah.
I just didn't think much. It wasn't like James said, look, you know, I need you to write this or else I won't be able to film the scene. You know, it was more like, hey, you know, why don't you just start digging in and think about developing some thematic ideas and what our emotional palette is, so that we can really identify on a fundamental level with the characters in the film, you know, by the time we get into post-production, you know, and then at least we know what our music is.
Okay.
We're not trying to find it there when everything is moving a million miles per hour. So he provided me key art and access to some of the previs, you know, animated action sequences that are essentially storyboard animations. And I started working to those. And through that exercise, a couple primary themes were developed. And then, you know, there were a couple of really beautiful sequences that he asked me to focus on, and then a basic Ronan theme. Mm-hmm. And he said he was playing him on set. And I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever, he's playing him on set. You know, I didn't realize until I went and visited the set that James, when he's filming, is in a tent with monitors that he's essentially seeing exactly what the cinematographer is filming.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a microphone in there that is connected to a very powerful PA on this huge soundstage. So sometimes he's giving feedback to or in direction to the actors or the crew, or generally just making jokes at Michael Rooker over the microphone. And when he's not, they'll crank the music, you know. And so when I first showed up to the set, Chris Pratt was sitting in James's tent. And James introduced us, and I'm like, hey, man, you know, congrats. This is really fantastic. He says, dude, he's like, it was so amazing to work with your music. He says, I never did it before, you know, and it was just so great. He said it just really focused everybody and gave us a great sense for what James is doing and for what the music's going to be in the movie, and it was really exciting. And I'm like, yeah, well, that sounds cool. Mm-hmm. And then from there, James just looked at me and he started laughing. He says, why don't you be a Ravager pilot? I'm like, what? And he says, why don't you be a Ravager pilot? So before I knew anything, you know, someone had whisked me up to hair and makeup, and I have dreads on and scars on my face and dressed as a Ravager, and they put me in a scene and they cranked Cherry Bomb over the PA. And at that moment, I really realized how significant it was to hear the music in context on set, like blast.
Yeah. I
would have been too embarrassed to be there while they were playing my stuff.
I was just going to ask that. Like, that would have been a really interesting experience to
have. Yeah, I was like, holy hell, I would have been totally embarrassed. Like, because it's just too weird, you know, for me. I don't, you know, I'm not entirely comfortable like that, you know.
I was going to say, is it like a vulnerability? Like, you're kind of exposed, like, this is me. You're listening to a part of me or something?
Yeah, you know, and I don't really like, you know, I'm not one for loving adulation, you know, I'm more about the challenge and the collaboration with people.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to get my ya-ya's out, I go play music with people.
Yeah.
So I do that as well. But when it comes to film scoring, I think it's just such a humbling gig that, you know, I'm just trying to do something really good. And then when I create these demos for James, you know, it's not blown out even to the degree that I would a sketch that we'll do in post-production that is very believable. Mm-hmm. So I was a little embarrassed, you know, that he was playing these cruder sketches, but, you know, the emotion still came across and they were still loud and big sounding. And,
sure.
You know, it was cool. Well, I mean, I appreciate the opportunity, you know, to develop a language or a DNA with him prior to post-production.
Now, did he tell you that that's what he was going to do with it when he first said, hey, you know, start working on some things, here's some artwork and so forth?
Well, I knew he was going to, he said he's going to film to it. I didn't know if that meant he was going to wear earbuds and listen to it or what he was going to do with it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I do know that, you know, we designed the end of Super that way, his previous film,
mm-hmm.
but that began with us having Rainn Wilson in the studio reciting his 3-minute epilogue to that film. And that was also an emotional experience because that was the first time James heard Rainn Wilson in Frank's character. And, you know, he'd written it a few years before, so he'd thought about it a long time. So for that, at that moment, that character came to life for the first time, and it touched both of us. You know, we're geeky and we're friends, so you know, we
Sure.
totally connect that way, you know, and are, you know, on an emotional level as well.
Sure.
And
Okay.
that was really powerful, you know. And I think when you're collaborating with people, whether it's on a film or a TV show or on a record or on any kind of a project where you have to dig deep into your soul, you know, you want to be present for those special moments to occur, because even though really nobody knows that that happened or it's happening, it gives you a lot of energy between you and between two people in a collaboration to work from. You know, there was a moment when it was birthed, you know, and that's what we try and create. We want the music to have existed somehow. And with this movie, we wanted it to feel like it existed, just like those songs did.
I was just going to say, in working with the songs in Guardians, which get a lot of the attention, and I'm wondering how that may have impacted you, or given, or put any more pressure on you to score around them, or especially when the music, it's not just songs that, it's diegetic music, and so now you're writing a score to work along with that. It doesn't seem like, from a viewer's perspective, that it's just like, okay, we need to tone the score way down because these songs are really going to drive the emotion of the film. The score seems to drive just as much emotion, but I'm wondering if you had to consider that, or if it even added even further pressure to your composing task.
This is strange. I kind of, all right, and part of me, especially doing genre movies where the fan expectations or preconceived notions is probably very intense, you know, people are imagining what it's going to be, or maybe that it's a reimagining or a new reboot or something of an existing property. So everybody has their idea of what it should be. So I just, first off, I keep myself pretty ignorant to that, out of respect to the fans and out of respect to the movie, because I think it would just polarize me to start thinking, you know, going down that rabbit hole. I just have to think about the movie and what the director wants. Now, with those songs are the one sort of living element that Peter Quill has from his mother. And obviously, she passed away when he was a boy, and that's his bond to her. Like, those are his photographs. Those are where his memories are lodged or banked. And so he relates to her through experiencing that music and all things in his life. You know, he's listened to that same cassette tape of songs forever. And, you know, my mother was my hugest influence or inspiration to pursue music in my life, and she was a avid music collector. You know, she died, she had probably 15,000 records, and she died young, and I was young enough to have it be, you know, pretty intense in my life. And so I related to Peter Quill and his experience with music and his mother, and also his development through the film, as a character, and learning to open up and trust people, and you know, to grow as a person. So those songs, I think, signified, you know, that whole aspect of the movie that relates to his mother and who he is as a person. And so for me, they had a very emotional impact, you know, and I find that to be inspiring for sure.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the other thematic material and some of the tracks that are even on the soundtrack release. Firstly, let me ask you without spoiling what happens in the scenes, but I think the music that you've composed for Groot, he has two really kind of shining moments, no pun intended. Is the music that plays over those two instances what we could consider his quote unquote theme?
Yeah, and both of those were written in advance to, they were written during production of the film, so those were
Okay.
also played on set.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're both very much intact, which I'm shocked, because the movie goes through so many permutations
Yes.
in post-production. I mean, obviously they're trying to make the greatest movie they can, and you have to sort out how to make this story flow and make it clean. And so even after you compose music, they're intercutting bits from other reels just to keep a storyline energetic and keep characters alive in each segment of the film. So music goes through a lot of adjustments or rewrites or what have you on a movie like this. But those two sequences, James's direction was he just wanted it beautiful and magical and fantastical. And the second one, Groot Cocoon, is really about loving people enough or your friends enough to sacrifice yourself for them. And that's a big moment. Not too many of us are ever faced with that in life. We may say what we would do, but to really do that is beyond, I think, what a lot of people think they're capable of. And so, I mean, it's a really powerful moment, and we wanted it to be epic, of course, because visually it's pretty epic, and two of our characters that were not construed as being emotional beings throughout the movie really have a really warm, amazing emotional exchange during that sequence. So yeah, it's silly, but I'm sitting here writing music to this, looking at an animated tree and an animated raccoon, and I have tears in my eyes.
It's a be both scenes are beautiful in their own rights, and that was the experience I was not expecting to have in this film, or especially not two of them at length. So that was a really wonderful surprise for me as a viewer, and even listening to the score prior to, I was like, wow, I wonder what's going on here. As I'm listening to the track before seeing the film, it just wasn't something that I anticipated, and that's part of the fun of going to the film and finding out some scenes are there and some tones are there that are not in the trailer, which is kind of a great experience too. I think you've mentioned in other interviews, your affinity for sci-fi and even Lost in Space, the old TV show. And it was funny when I heard you say that because I think it's in the track Guardians United. There's this staccato brass that's used in there, and it reminded me, before I heard your interview, it reminded me literally of the Lost in Space TV theme, not the first one that John Williams did. I don't know if he did the second one, obviously, but it's a different theme. Was there any in connection there? Any just an ode to, or just something that just came out of you, if you even know what I'm talking about?
No, to be honest with you, I'm pretty ignorant when it comes to the film scores, and I have a couple of friends who are aficionados on it. It's more like snapshots or impressions that are made. Like, for instance, when I was a kid, I used to watch Night Gallery all the time. I can't think offhand exactly what the music was when Rod Sterling was introducing each segment, but there was an impression, like a feeling that I got from it. And I'll be honest with you, a friend of mine got married the other day, and at first when he was walking down the aisle, I thought for a second it was Fantasia, and then when he got halfway down the aisle, I realized it was the Star Wars theme. But I just wasn't you I didn't know the music very well until the actual theme kicked in. I'm like, oh, no kidding.
Ah,
Okay.
gotcha. Okay.
So he literally got married to the Star Wars theme, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is. Now, they've announced Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Are you in for that, or is it too early to say?
You know, I would love to be. I mean, James texted me yesterday that, you know, he's already working on ideas for the opening of the new one. He's like, you're ready to get going. So
awesome.
Hopefully so, you know.
Awesome.
I mean, it would be so awesome to have this experience and have some, you know, the principal themes in place and then be able to really take the time to take them further and take characters further. And, you know, because at some point when you get into post-production on a movie like this, and it was a very truncated schedule to execute a movie like this, the fact that it came together as well as it did is just mind-blowing to me. And it's a testament to James Gunn just being absolute dedicated workaholic genius, because it's really tight considering how quickly this occurred. I mean, once you understand the process of all the processes involved that have to go perfectly well to make this movie, you know, you just realize that, you know, the time they had was probably not as much as they should have. So moving forward, you know, to have a little bit more time to anticipate where we want to go would just give us an opportunity to make even, you know, better movie and a better score. And we're really proud of this, you know.
Sure.
I think he did a beautiful job, and that's before everyone saw it. But, you know, now that I can't do anything about it, you know, I see all the mistakes in the music, and I want to make a better score even, you know. I mean,
sure.
I'm really proud of the thematic material, but I think we could even take it further.
Yeah. Well, what about, there's an animated series that's supposed to be coming to Disney XD. Would you be involved with that?
No one's discussed it with me. You know, I'm open to anything. You know, I've learned over time just to be open-minded about any possible opportunity, you know. And if the people involved are really cool and they're excited and talented, I'm open to anything. I just keep my mind open. I want to stay excited about music in my life, you know.
Well, that's a good way to be. Thinking further on, you know, if you did come back for Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I don't know if you seeded anything for the brief time that Thanos was there, but what in your mind would you, what do you think you would like to do if you were to score the second film and really if he was a major part of it as a villain? You know, I think composers do some of their most memorable and fantastic work when it comes to villains. I know Ronan had his kind of an electronic side to it, kind of grungy, a lot of percussion, and then this low brass motif. Mm-hmm. But it's not like, it's not an in your face sort of theme so much. But when I think about Thanos, you know, he's like the ultimate. What would you want to do for him?
Well, it would obviously imagine, you know, it would depend how significant a role Thanos would play in that film and how he's framed. And with Ronan, the theme that was originally composed for him is quoted fully in one instance. And it's totally melodic, like da 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 da, you know, sort of diabolically stated.
That's the low brass one?
Yeah, but there's one instance where that melody is in there, and we realize that we wanted Ronan to come across as being just a bit more cold-hearted and even more of a believable badass. So we wanted to maybe steep the music in a little bit more of a sci-fi realism by not overstating a big, bold melody for him. It was more like, oh, hell, here's Ronan. You know, it was like, you know, there wasn't like that's the theme, you know. It was just like, oh, it's more of a motif, like a sound for Ronan's presence.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, it still gave us the latitude to launch into any aspect of our Guardians themes from that when they were in conflict with Ronan. But, you know, I can't even pontificate about what the next movie would be. I'm sure James Gunn is going to come up with something brilliant.
Sure.
I know him so well that he would probably put double the pressure on himself to make an even better movie, you know.
Yeah.
He's one of the most not lazy people I've ever known mentally, you know. I mean, he's always striving to do something great. So I would just probably, you know, anticipate something fantastic to work with and hopefully, you know, do a good job with it if the
Sure.
opportunity arises to do so.
Well, I know that as we wrap up here, I know we this obviously is a Marvel property, and I feel like your score fits perfectly into the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, even though it's, you know, a universe away almost, or I don't know exactly what the locations of these places are in relation to the Earth, but the music anyway, I feel fits very well into that universe. Now, obviously, Brian Tyler is very has been very involved since Iron Man 3, Thor. I know he had some dialogue with Henry Jackman when it came to The Winter Soldier. Was he involved at all in discussing with you the directions and some of the ideas that you might have, or no?
No.
Not at all. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, it's great that it fits. I mean, it's great that, you know, most of the thematic material that's coming together in phase two, especially, seems to be things that will work together if that opportunity for those characters to coexist on the screen ever turn up. But
Well, fingers crossed, it would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
oh man, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think now that Guardians of the Galaxy will be in the public consciousness as a whole, I mean, honestly myself, I didn't know much about it until, you know, the first waves of information started coming out about the film. I didn't know much about who they were or where they fit into anything. And so now it's just going to be a thing. Everyone's going to know. You say Guardians, they're going to know exactly, in the mainstream, they're going to know exactly what you're talking about. Well, I certainly hope you do come back on for the second film and hope they get you involved in the animated series as well. It's a wonderful film. It's a great score, and you and James Gunn and everyone on that project deserve every accolade you're going to receive, every award and whatnot. So I thank you for the work that you've done, and now I think expectations on you and your career are going to be different. It's everyone say, yeah,
Well,
he did Doomsday and he did Slither, but he
you know,
also did Guardians, so you never know what we're going to get.
yeah, well, you know, I have a very broad and, you know, spectrum of music that influenced me in my life and continues to do so. So yeah, you know, I'll always try and keep things interesting.
You've been listening to a special soundcast interview with composer Tyler Bates. I'm Christopher Coleman, your host and producer of the show, and you can find Tyler Bates' original score for Guardians of the Galaxy on the deluxe edition release from Hollywood Records at Amazon.com. You can find more episodes of the soundcast at tracksounds.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. You can also find us on Twitter and on Facebook and on YouTube, all under the name of Track Sounds. We thank you for listening, and until our next episode, we say, may the notes be with you.